Hi, this is Russ Taft.
Hi, this is John Olifanti.
Hi, this is John Schlippen-Petra.
Hi, this is Kim Boyce.
Hey, everybody, Stephen Curtis Chapman here, and you are listening to Jesus Freaks Final to Digital.
Hi, I'm Jason Huddle, host of Jesus Freaks Final to Digital. Before we get into this week's program, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for downloading this episode and giving us a listen. If you really like what you hear, we'd love to have your support. How can you do that, you say? Well, I'm glad you asked. Simply visit patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast and become a monthly sponsor. Now, you can do that for as little as two measly dollars per month, or you can go higher and get special perks, like advance access to episodes when available, the opportunity to submit questions I will ask our artists on future episodes, and even your very own Jesus Freaks t-shirt. Again, that's patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And hey, if you'd like your business or organization to become a sponsor of this program, let us know by visiting our website, JesusFreaksPodcast.com, and click on the Become a Sponsor link at the bottom of the page. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's get on with the show.
Hi, this is Russ Taff, and you're listening to Jesus Freaks, Vinyl to Digital.
David Payton was briefly the lead guitarist for one of Christian rock's biggest bands of the 80s and 90s, Mylon and Broken Heart. A very talented guitarist, but perhaps a little rough around the edges, David lost his opportunity after recording only one album with the band.
I met a woman at church that had two kids already. Somehow in my mind, it was like instant family. To be honest with you, it was kind of a trap. And Satan used that as my security blanket. So when Mylon fired me the last time, I said, fine. And it was one of the biggest mistakes of my life.
This week, we talked to David about his life, what led him to be part of Broken Heart, and what God has been doing in his life since. Plus, we'll take a look back at some of the music Payton recorded with Mylon and Broken Heart, and we'll hear some originals from Payton himself. That's all coming up right now on Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a presentation of Cabco Media Group. I'm your host, Jason Huddle. To the show right now, David Payton, former lead guitarist for Mylon and Broken Heart, a band that is very close to my heart, no pun intended. David, first of all, thanks a lot for being on the program today.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you.
I understand you started playing guitar at a very young age, like around 8 or 9 years old. What inspired you to pick up a guitar?
My mom and dad both sang. My dad played guitar and pretty much anything he could pick up. Banjo and mandolin and all that bluegrass stuff. And the church we grew up in was a Pentecostal Holy Roller church. And there were probably 7 or 8 guitars up there on the stage and a few tambourines and a poor lady in the back pounding away at a piano you could barely hear. And I think there was a drummer at one time or another. But so everybody played guitar. So I wanted to play guitar. And I'd sneak and play. My dad had a really nice Martin D28 guitar that I think he spent $300 for it in 1964. And I would sneak in to get it out of his closet and play it while he was at work. So mom talked him into getting me a little acoustic guitar. The action was about that high. And it was, you know, literally like the Bryan Adams song, played it till my fingers bled, you know.
Right.
And I was actually 5 or 6 when I started playing. Trying to play, and I'd have to lay it across my lap because I couldn't reach everything and play it that way. But eventually my dad passed away when I was 8, so I got his guitar. Yeah, I got his Martin. So I
still got it.
Had a great guitar to learn on. No, actually I lost it. It got stolen when I was at Florida Bible College.
Oh, wow.
I had stuff in storage, a bunch of stuff in storage, and that was one of the things. And it's just gone. So, but I had it for a lot of years. I had, you know, about 10 years, I guess.
So as I understand it, by the time you were 10, 11 years old, you're already winning, you know, talent competitions and things like that, right?
Yeah. As soon as my dad passed away, I got that gray guitar and I would play it all the time. I would come home from school and play it until supper time and then go in my room and play it some more. And mom had to make me go to bed. And she had also bought me a little electric silver tone guitar from Sears Roebuck. And, when it was time to go to bed, I would grab that one because you couldn't hear it in the next room. You know, it wasn't plugged right in. So I just lay on my back in the bed and play it, laying across my stomach. And so, yeah, it was a real passion of mine for a long time.
And, all right. So what was your go-to? So every musician that I know, and I'm a musician myself, so I know you always have a go-to, like, when you want to impress the people around you, what was your go-to song to start strumming or start picking?
Back then, it was Secret Agent Man or one of those. You know, all yeah. Batman. The kids loved that. My friends loved all that stuff. Yeah, it was just late 60s, early 70s. So. Yeah, that was one of them. And later on, it was, you know, Susie Q. It evolved as I grew older, obviously. You know, I didn't really appreciate the bluegrass stuff that much back then. That's what my mom and dad loved, the bluegrass gospel stuff. And when my father died, you know, my mom started buying me, you know, rock and roll records and stuff. So I'd learn all that stuff. And, I liked a real wide variety of music and still do to this day. I listen to Bluegrass Junction on Sirius XM and I listen to Lithium. I listen to hard rock. I listen to blues, a lot of blues. It's kind of my wheelhouse. Acoustic, mellow stuff. I was listening to Celtic relaxation music last night. It's just, I mean, I love all kinds of music.
So, an eclectic mix of music in your repertoire there. Yeah. Very good. So when did you know that that music not only was something that you were passionate about, but was something that you wanted to do with your life as a career?
We had a pretty good local rock band, and I wanted to be there, do that so badly. And as I said, my father passed away when I was 8. 3 years later, my mother passed away, and I moved to Indianapolis with my oldest brother. And he had 2 boys almost my age. They were my nephews, but I was their Uncle David. But, you know, it was like being adopted into another family as the oldest of 3 boys. And immediately I got hooked up with the local rock bands there. I was 11 when I first started playing with a band. And when I was 13, we played on the David Letterman show in Indianapolis. It was a local show. He was a weatherman and goofball on television, and he had a show on Saturdays, and we played on his show a couple of times, and one of the few bands he actually had back, you know, so that was a lot of fun. So 13, I'm playing on David Letterman's show, and then we start getting gigs from that, you know, playing skating rinks and parties, and, you know, I was too young to play in the clubs. We were all in high school, but we would sneak every once in a while and play in some places like that that served alcohol, you know, skating rink, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, and I did all that through school. And I was also in all the you know, high school musicals and all that stuff as well. Anything had to do with music. I can't read music, never could read music. If you put a piece of music in front of me, I can look at a note and count up the lines and tell you what note it is or whatever. But
sure,
I cannot sit and read music and play.
So do you just play completely by ear, or do you just, totally. Okay.
Totally by ear. I never had a lesson or any of that, but it's just, you know, you have a passion for it. And I don't think Eric Clapton had any lessons either. I don't think he reads music either. So, I mean, it's not that I'm Eric Clapton by any stretch of the imagination, but you can learn how to play music through reading music and being taught music and theory, and that's all great. And orchestral, you obviously have to have all that. But I think a lot of people who just create from within them can sit down at a piano or a guitar and just create music without anything being written. You know, I think that's just a gift. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah, that is true.
You can learn to be a technician and reproduce what you see on a page. And that's a talent in and of itself. It's a discipline, and that's a gift as well. But I think just being able to, you know, just coming out of you, you know, I think that's.
Yeah, I mean, in music is something that you emote. And if right. you can't feel it, then you're not going to be able to convey that to your audience. I totally agree. Totally right. agree. So let me ask you about your faith. You say you grew up in a Pentecostal Holy Roller Church. Mm-hmm. But what was the point where your parents' faith became your faith?
Well, that church specifically, that denomination, not dogging it by any, you know, by any stretch, but the effect it had on me was really, it was very legalistic. Sure. You know, women couldn't wear makeup and had to wear dresses, and, you know, men had to have short hair, and you couldn't play any kind of rock and roll music. And, you know, it was very legalistic. And my mom was actually kind of on the edge of rebellion throughout that whole thing. She wore a little makeup and she had her hair done and all that stuff. And her skirts went down to her knee, and it was like, oh, you know, so after my dad died, she kind of, you know, cut loose a lot more. And I still went to church, but I went to my cousin's Baptist church, which wasn't nearly as legalistic. It was more saved by grace through faith. And that was a whole different concept for me, because the other church was, you know, God's waiting for you to do something wrong, and he's got his thumb on the nuke button, and every, you know, right. if you sin, you have to get saved again, you know, every time. So I've been saved thousands of times, as far as I know. And after my mom died, I went to Indianapolis, and I tried to go to church, and I found a couple of cool, you know, what I call hippie churches that had, you know, the youth director played guitar and had kind of long hair and was cool. And we used the, what was that called? Had the stick figure Jesus and stick figure characters in drawn inside. It was not the Living Bible, but it was the precursor to the Living Bible.
Yeah, sure.
But it was in plain English, which helped me so much. And they were very much about the grace through faith thing. And it was just really hard to get that through my head, that I didn't have to be good for God to love me. And it really didn't sink in totally until I graduated from high school and went on the road at 17, with a group called His Ambassadors. And it was a very conservative, I had hair down past my shoulders playing in the rock bands and all over town, but I really, really never lost my faith. I mean, I'd feel guilty, you know, because I was doing the rock and roll thing, right. but I had that underlying river of faith that, you know, the Lord had never left me, and he always let me know somehow that he was there. And this little Christian group came through town, and they all looked like Pat Boone. They had short hair and little, you know, shell sweaters, and they all dressed alike and had white polyester pants on. And they looked like absolute complete dorks, but they really reached me with that message. And they said, we're auditioning for singers. And so I just went up there with my long hair, and we went in the back room in the Sunday school room, and he pounded out some songs, and I sang with a few of them. And he said, we're going to fly you out to Colorado in a couple of weeks, and you're going to join the group. So right out of high school, I went from hippie to Pat Boone in a really conservative.
Did you have to cut your hair?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, beard, hair, everything. Couldn't have any facial hair or any of that stuff. It was legalistic, but it was also grace through faith.
Sure.
So, I mean, they were legalistic about their appearance and how, because they wanted to be able to play in any church. And so they didn't want to be edgy in any way, shape, or form, especially musically.
So how in the world did a guy in a conservative Pat Boone-ish type group end up connecting with a long-haired ex-rocker drug addict like Mylon LaFever?
It was a step-by-step process. I went from His Ambassadors, and I went and then they were out of Florida Bible College. So the whole year I was with His Ambassadors was basically a commercial for Florida Bible College. And so I signed up and went to Florida Bible College for a year And while I was there, another group, a bigger group with horns and more albums out and playing bigger places called Eternity, asked me to come and join them and play guitar. I was singing with his ambassadors and did not play guitar. And Eternity one had plenty of singers, but they needed a guitar player. So I auditioned and I went on the road with them for a year. And then from there, I went with to the Cruz family out of Texas, and they were a lot hipper. And had, the drummer had long hair and the bass player had long hair. And, you know, they had come out of the Southern gospel scene, and they were more, much more of a contemporary Christian group by the time I joined them. And I played with them for about a year. And then I came to Atlanta, played in local Christian bands here, and went on the road with a group called Free Fair. There's an organization in Florida called Young American Showcase. And they put out bands every year. They used to. Four, five, six, up to eight bands every year. They audition guys from all over the country and put these bands together. And they put you in a camp at a school or whatever and teach you how to communicate and, you know, stage presence and energy and peaks and valleys and how to build a show and all that stuff. And I did that for 2 years, and it just changed everything. I mean, that was long hair, spandex, you know, jumping off the speakers.
Now you're really a rock and roller.
Yes, yes. That was much more my wheelhouse. And so we were doing 10 to 15 shows a week for 10 months.
Wow.
All over the
That's grueling, man.
United States, all the way up to Newfoundland, my band was. And I mean, the bands went all over, everywhere in North America. And I did that for 2 years, and it was like musical boot camp in every way. And it was a Christian group. We would go into high school and do an assembly show for 90 minutes or 45 minutes and then get them all rocking and give them a little, you know, just a little taste of what we're going to do at the concert tomorrow night. Then at the concert, we'd rock them out and everything. And then we'd bring it down at the end and give them a little clear but concise gospel presentation. We're all Christians up here. If you notice there's something different about us, it's because Jesus Christ lives in us, and we're all believing the Lord Jesus Christ, and we're all born again Christians. And if you want to talk about that after the concert, we'd be happy to. And so that was our seed. We were seed planters, and that was intense. That was just, I loved that. And Mylon was replacing a guitar player. And somehow, through all Young American Showcase and the Cruz family and stuff, my name came up. And I was actually at a really, really low point in my life. I'd left the Free Fair band to come home because I didn't want to lose the relationship I had with my fiance at the time.
Yeah.
Ended up losing it anyway. So I was kind of left in the, I was depressed, didn't have a girlfriend, wasn't in a band anymore. I was working a terrible job that I hated. And I was like, God, you know, please, I've just messed everything up. And I took a day off work, spent probably 2 or 3 hours just on my face praying, God, please, you know, take the mess I've made and use me however you want to, you know, just take me and put me on your hand like a glove. That's the way I always thought about it. I'm getting a little choked up about it anyway.
No, right, that's now, okay. Russ Staff was on our show last week, man, and he was all choked up. So don't even worry about it.
Anyway, and I was just crying and crying. I prayed as much as I could, but I just ended up just crying and crying until I couldn't cry anymore. And then this peace just washed over me, you know, and it was Holy Spirit now. And, you know, the Lord just told me, basically, I've got you. I've always had you. I've never left you. You've never left me. And this peace just washed over me. Hours later, I get a phone call from my ex-girlfriend's mother saying, Milo Lefevre is trying to get a hold of you. Would you, do you want me to give him your number? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
So probably 3 or 4 weeks later, I was on the bus with Milan. So went from selling shoes, or I think I was working at a warehouse then, driving a forklift or something, and just hated it. And went, you know, just poured it out to God, and that was all he needed, you know, to open that door for me.
Now, what was this after Brand New Start? Where did you come in?
Yeah, it was after Brand New Start. It was after Moore. It's at the end of Moore. There was one other guy, Dean Harrington and Tim Huffman both left. So Scott Allen came in, replaced Tim. And they had an interim lead guitar player to replace Dean for a little while, but it was only a few months. And I was the one replacing him. So it was at the end of Moore. And before Sheep and Wolves Clothing, and during Sheep and Wolves Clothing, and the beginnings of the Look Up album was all done while I was there. And I left right before Crack the Sky, I guess.
Yeah.
I was there for 2 years. When I came in the group, they didn't really have lights. They had kind of a couple of little trees on the side. And they were pretty good, but I did what I'd learned with Free Fair. All that jumping around and getting in the audience's face and never looking at my guitar and running around and singing on other people's microphones. And Milan really liked that. He thought that would help if everybody did that stuff. So, I mean, I did all this side to side moves and, you know, all that stuff. And he said, teach us how to do that. And so I was just showing him moves and stuff, you know, what Free Fair taught me to do and little, what we call showcase concepts. And basically ended up choreographing the whole show. You know, I mean, if you notice, almost every show was had the same moves and all that stuff. And he liked it. He said I helped him a lot. I was a big shot in the arm for them when they hired me. So I consider that a blessing. He even said that a couple of years ago when I saw him again. He said, you sold us a lot of tickets, Dave. I was like, praise God.
Well, Sheep and Wolves Clothing, I mean, that, of course, memory serves. That one won a Grammy, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's really when Milan and Broken Heart really started to hit the stratosphere in the Christian rock world.
Yeah. Yeah, so we went from playing to in gyms, high school gyms, for 800 to 1,000 people on a good night to, I think the tickets were $5 or $6 a piece. Yep. Back then when I first got in the group. We played bigger places, the festivals and stuff, but daytime slots and all that. But we went from that to the huge light show, the tractor trailer and the bus and all that within that 2 years I was in the band.
Till all the heavens.
I remember, in fact, my first, I want to say my first Christian concert was at Sunfest, which was held in Myrtle Beach. And it was 1985. You guys were headlining. And I've always wanted to ask a question. I've always had it in the back of my head. Okay. So I was at that concert and you guys, I mean, you were completely rocking it. And I remember being about 10, 11 years old at the time and just absolutely floored. Like I couldn't believe this was a Christian band that was up there just absolutely rocking it. And anyway, so I guess about three quarters through the concert, you guys finished I Will Rejoice, or I can't remember exactly which song it was, but you finished one and boom, huge explosion. And I wasn't sure if it was pyrotechnics or what, but basically at that point, you guys were having a hard time getting the instruments to work. Something, I don't know if you guys shorted something out, and Mylon ended up just sitting down. There was a mic. There was one mic that was working. And so he ended up just sitting down and talking. I think he talked for 2 hours. I'm not kidding you. I think he talked for 2 hours at least.
He can. He can. but you know, with all of his history, you know, I mean, I heard all
a powerful
the
testimony for sure. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Powerful testimony and a lot of names to drop and stuff, but it was real, you know?
Well, that was always my question. I was like, I always wondered, was that just something that they said to give him an excuse to talk for so long, or was really blow something out?
No, we never blew anything out on purpose, and he did talk a lot. He could meander sometimes, but we'd be standing there supporting him, looking at him holding our guitars, you know, or sitting behind the drums looking at him. That's because that's what you do. Whoever's talking or singing, the rest of the band is supposed to be supporting that person and directing all the attention to that person. So that's what we would do. And if somebody was running around behind the scenes trying to plug stuff in and fix things, that was not at all part of the plan. Right. So because you don't want to be a distraction or misdirect from,
right,
you know, it's all show business. And I mean, it's not, you know, it's not. But as far as how you handle the stage, the rules work, you know.
Right.
So,
well, I still remember that concert. Yeah, I still remember it to this day. And he's talked for about 2 hours, and then they finally got everything working. And then you guys still played for another, I think, at least 45 minutes. I mean, it was the total set, including Mylon's talk time, was probably a 4 hour concert. I'm not kidding.
Wow. Wow.
It was long. And you guys were the last, I mean, you were the headlining band. It was the last show of the festival. So were you on? Were you on the Live Forever recorded?
No, that was Dean.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But you did do like Creation Fest and things like that. Yeah, so
I did two Creation Fests with them. One was we played one on I think a Friday or Saturday afternoon 1 year, and then we headlined the next year.
So what was that like to go from
God.
playing gyms with 800 people to playing in front of 63,000?
It was crazy. And I did that guitar solo every night. So no matter how big the crowd, we'd go into Freedom and I'd go into my guitar solo and we'd do our little stick with the jumping around and all that stuff at the beginning. And then everybody would leave and go get a drink and towel off and maybe change a shirt or whatever. And I'm out there for 5 or 6 minutes by myself with 63,000 people staring at me. And it was like at all adrenaline, and my fingers felt like sausages. I mean, it was literally, I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. And I'm out here, you know, but it was such a thrill. And honestly, it was one of the highlights of my life.
Your acoustic on you right now and you don't have electric, but can you still do that part of that solo?
Nah, I don't. You know, just a little, it's mostly riffs, and then, you know, it's just tricks. I'm not a shredder. I'm not even, you know, I opened for Phil Kagi one time and I just felt like an idiot. I said, I don't know why I have this piece of wood hanging around my neck. He is a guitarist.
He is phenomenal for sure.
I'm just the hack compared to that, those guys. And they had a magazine poll, greatest rock, Christian rock guitarist of all time or something. And I was number 69. And there were so many people way better than me that were under me. And it was like, this is embarrassing. But I know showmanship makes up for a lot of, you know, AC/DC, Angus Young is not a great technician on the guitar. But he didn't have to be, you know, right. He came up with the riffs and you know, he played great at what he did. So that's what I tried to do. Just play what the song needs.
When it's quiet and you just pick up your guitar and you want to play anything from those days that you just start strumming or start picking out?
Yeah. I mean, the more, okay. I love that part.
Oh man. That song.
I know. And I try to do, you know, I'm kind of mellow now. I'm older now. I'm plenty something. But I like more just. I don't play the acoustic very much because I've got an electric that sounds like an acoustic. So I don't actually play this one very much. In fact, I was working on one of my songs off my one CD that I did back in 91 on Refuge Records. It was called He Can that I wrote for my daughter. I was actually working on a new track for that because I want to re-release it. And okay. That's fine. To light your day, I couldn't make you a tree to cool you with shade, and I couldn't give you a meadow to run through and play. Oh, he came. I know that he can. I'll skip a verse. Baby, you can be with those eyes that can see only goodness and strength within me. Papa, you need to know of the one who could go to the cross so that you could be free. And the payment he made simply can't be repaid. It's a love that we can't understand. And I'm longing to see what a wonder you'll be as he molds your young life in his hands. Anyway, that's the idea.
Outstanding, man.
Thanks. Good job.
So,
I ain't singing out dry. It's just so, you know.
No, it's all good, man. It's all good. Listen, Mike Stand, he was on a few weeks ago, Mike Stand from the Altar Boys, and
he
had his guitar, man, and he would just start wailing real, like, out of the blue in the middle of the interview, and I was trying to follow him, but it's always good. I always love hearing everybody do their own thing, man, and just, I love that. Anyway, so big question, you know,
sure.
Sheeple Wool's Clothing, you guys, as I said before, hit the stratosphere, and then you left the group. What happened?
Boy, I don't know how intensely to go into it, but I have Asperger's syndrome to a certain degree. So I say and do things that are inappropriate for the time. I'd say what I think, regardless of whether I should or not. I used to a lot more. I've kind of realized now that I've been actually diagnosed that I have Asperger's. I need to keep my mouth shut unless, you know. But I didn't back then. And I would just say, I think we should do this. And instead of doing all this techno pop stuff, you know, trying to be trendy, let's just do what we do. Let's be a rock, blues rock band, you know. And that was my thing. That's what Mylon does the best. And it was the 80s, and he was really trying to stay with the, you know, the MTV style of music. And, you know, you might have called it creative differences. And I stayed on his bad side a lot because I would constantly, you know, try to pull him in the more organic direction. And his way of dealing with me personally was if I did something bad, or he'd just fire me, and he would, you know, we're just going to replace you. You know, I can't deal with your attitude or whatever. And then he'd change his mind, and then we'd go along, and then he'd fire me again. And then he changed his mind. And if you remember, I don't have mom and dad.
Yeah.
And to fall back on, I don't have anywhere to go. So he really played up on my insecurities. And he has since humbly apologized for all that.
Oh, he's a different guy than he was then, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I met a woman at church that had two kids already. Somehow in my mind, it was like instant family, you know. And so, to be honest with you, it was kind of a trap. And Satan used that as my security blanket. So when Mylon fired me the last time, I said, fine, you know, I'm going to get married anyway. So, and he tried a lot. He said, we'll send you to so-and-so. We'll do this. We'll work this out. And it's like, no, I'm gone. And it was one of the biggest mistakes of my life. Tried to make the marriage work for 14 years, and it didn't. And that was 2000. And since then, I've remarried 18 years now, married the right one.
Good for you.
We're doing great. Very happy. She's upstairs. She's very supportive of my music, and I wouldn't be who I am right now without her, honestly, because I was a shell of who I once was when I ended the first marriage, and depressed and just miserable, and wasn't doing music anymore, and I just wasn't who I was, I am.
Yeah.
But since then, you know, I did my CD back in 1991, and
what was that like to be the main man? After being a backup for so long?
Well, it was small fish in a small pond at that time. So, because it was Refuge Records, which had some great artists at one time, but they were kind of on their last legs, and they didn't really indicate that to me when they signed me. So they took an album that Dean Harrington and I, former guitarist of Broken Heart, and I produced together, and mastered it and released it on their label, and we sold all the ones that they made, but they kind of went under without, you know, telling anybody, and they didn't do any radio support or any of that stuff. So it kind of fizzled out, but I didn't fizzle out. I started doing festivals and myself, and put a little band together, and then I started doing youth groups and retreats and rallies, and played down at Disney World with a group youth explosion thing, and I did a whole lot of stuff for like that for about 10 years, where it was just me and my backing tracks that I made myself, and my songs and my story. There's a lot to my story. We don't have time to go into all that stuff. But, you know the low lights and the highlights. So,
Now that we're sitting here in 2020, looking back, What is something that you wish you could have accomplished? And what is something that you look back and go, wow, I can't believe I got to do that?
We've kind of discussed the, wow, I can't believe I got to do that. We did the big video, Sheep and Wolves Clothing video, which is still, I still see on television every once in a while, snippets from, and people sharing it on different places. The worst thing probably was leaving the band when I did. I wish I'd stuck it out and been smarter and not so rebellious, stubborn, all, you know, all the things. And I wish I'd stuck it out and seen where that would, I would have had a better jumping off point. I wish I hadn't gotten married the first time to the person I married. Wish I'd married the one I ended up marrying.
Yeah.
I actually knew her back then, but I kind of jumped off into oblivion, you know, and although the Lord has blessed me a lot, I did travel around and a lot of kids got saved. You know,
absolutely, man.
And I was shocked at how successful that was, because it was just me being who I am and writing my songs. And then I put this little Amazing Grace medley together where I would sing the lyrics of Amazing Grace to, you know, Elvis, Beatles, Beach Boys, Jimi Hendrix, ZZ Top, Robert Palmer, Led Zeppelin, and even Nirvana. And that was a big lick that, you know, it was a medley that I would go from through the history of rock and roll, but singing Amazing Grace to all these songs. And a lot of people invited me back because of that, you know.
Oh, you need to lay that down and then send it to us and we can play it for our listeners.
I need to do a new one, you know, because it stopped at Nirvana and that's a long time ago now.
But yeah, you got a whole another 30 years to cover.
Yeah, got a long time to go since then.
One final Mylan question, and then we'll skip ahead to what you're doing now and how people can find you.
I don't mind at all. Go ahead.
Yeah, appreciate it. Look Up. Did you say you played on Look Up?
No, I was there while that was being put together. That was actually some songs that Mylan had done before Broken Heart, and kind of off to the side of Broken Heart years before. And they reproduced them, updated them I think even the vocals were all done years before that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was semi-secular.
Yeah. That was my recollection. It was his attempt to kind of cross over into the secular world and get, you know.
Well, he's trying to get on MTV and all that, VH1. Yeah. And I don't believe it worked. It was kind of like the Garth Brooks doing the Chris Gaines thing. It just wasn't.
I don't remember it being a really big hit.
No.
Didn't really take off.
It really wasn't.
I lied. I have one more question, but it has to do not necessarily with Mylan. It has to do with the buses, because those buses, the Mylan bus was legendary, right?
It was legendary. It was the baddest bus on the road at the time. Even, you know, the biggies like Michael W. Smith would ride on it with us, and Bill Gaither and, you know, Mark Farner came out on the road with us for a few days and opened for us, which is the craziest
Holy
thing.
Cow, because
he was one of my biggest heroes, you know, going up through high school. And he actually gave me a $2,000 guitar because I was leaving the band at that time. And it was like, you know, Mylan kind of gave it to me, you know, as a parting gift kind of deal or whatever. But it was very cool. And it came from Mark Farner, and he had played it, and that was very cool. But anyway, the bus we were talking about, it was a double decker. It was a Neoplan. There's a lot of buses like it on the road now, but then it was the baddest bus on the road and nobody had anything like it.
Right.
And we had to get the top of the line Peterbilt tractor trailer, you know, best of the best tractor trailer to carry all our best of the best gear and lights and all that stuff. So, and it was all painted the same, so everybody knew who it was when we pulled in, and that was kind of cool. But did you have any specific?
Well, I just wanted to know if you had a good bus story.
Just having all those cool people ride on it with us.
Yeah,
the Imperials, got right. You know, some of those guys wrote it with us. And like I said, Smitty, Michael W. Smith came on and Russ Taff came on. A lot of, I mean, Russ has been a hero of mine too. He's like probably one of my all time Christian idols.
He's a lot of
idols.
People's hero. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, but yeah, just hanging out with those guys, it was just really, really just, you know, I never stopped being starstruck.
Right.
You know, even though we're kind of up there with them, supposedly, but it didn't feel like it to me.
Well, I've got here with me, I've got, you can see this.
The
Sheep and Wolves Clothing. This is the CD. And your pixelated self right there beside Mylan. Although I've always thought Mylan kind of looked like a woman in this picture.
You know what? That was his last. I think he learned such a lesson on that album cover because he got in there with the artist and told him what to do and do this with this guy and the colors are all wrong. None of us have those colors on. he made his hair bigger than it should be. You know, he turned Stan Coates into Paul Joseph, you know, digitally. And I always hated that cover. But, you know, what do you do?
Yeah.
I didn't have anything to do with it. So,
yeah, I get it.
All the covers after that were awesome. I mean,
they were incredible.
He learned his lesson. They were great.
They were incredible. I've got several of them here beside me. And they were incredible. Just awesome. Before I let you go, you actually are for hire. People can come and have you out to their events and things like that. How can they find you? How can they get in touch with you?
DavidPayton.com. David, PAYTON.com. And my phone number's on there. You can call me direct and whatever you need me to do. I do cover music now just to make a living, basically. I do, parties and wedding receptions and all that stuff. And, you know, just sing and play rock, pop, blues covers. And it's fun, but it's not who I am. Again, it's that underlying, what I was doing when I had my album out and doing the youth, that was who I was. And I want to do something like that again. And I'm actually upstairs working on that as we speak. Putting some of my own stuff, redoing some of the older stuff. And there's a lot of songs I've written since then that have never been recorded. So I want to, before I die, I want to get all that stuff down, you know.
And when you get it down, you can come back on the show. We'll play it, man. I want to hear it.
I'm
all for it, brother. Listen, David Payton, solo musician and a former member of Mylan and Broken Heart, thank you so much for being on Jesus Freaks with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Only one thing could get to me, and it was sharper than a sword. One thing could get to me, it was sharper than a sword. It seemed to wash right through me. It was the love of my sweet Lord.
I want to thank David Payton once again for being on the program. Hey, a special announcement for those of you who love your Amazon devices, our podcast is now available on Amazon Music. So just say, Alexa, play Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital podcast, and it will be right there on your Amazon device. If you didn't get enough Mylan music this week, you want to make sure you tune in next week. Scott Allen, longtime rhythm guitarist for Mylan and Broken Heart, will be right here on the program. We'll look back at some more Broken Heart music, as well as talk to Scott about what he's up to these days. And in 2 weeks, we will have our first female guest, Jennifer York, founding member of Rachel Rachel. You remember the all-female Christian rock band. They were awesome. And she's going to be right here on this program. So make sure you tune in for that. You have been listening to Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a presentation of Cabco Media Group. It is hosted and produced by yours truly, Jason Huddle, with special thanks to research assistant Kevin Jewell. Taking us out is a David Payton original, Fire and Brimstone Blues. Until next week, God bless.